C-24. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. As evening fell in Birchwood, Dan's recently expanded inner circle of Clark, Emma, Tara, and Timo were all sitting in his basement eagerly awaiting the arrival of Trey and his potentially world-changing footage. Belatedly, Emma commented that the air felt less oppressive than it had during her first time in the basement. Dan pointed to a box-like device on the doorside wall next to his security center and explained that it was some kind of air purification thing he'd searched for online and purchased on the back of Emma's previous comments so that she wouldn't be uncomfortable. "Well, it seems to work," she said, smiling warmly at the small kindness. As time ticked by, Trey's arrival drew ever nearer. He had made only one rest stop for a short nap, breaking the 17-hour drive home from Lolo into two more manageable but still grueling legs, and his very recent phone call to Dan revealed that he was now back in his nearby home and would be in Birchwood imminently. Emma ensured Trey was fully aware that he couldn't divulge any of what he had seen the previous night to anyone, and more specifically that this anyone included the wife with whom he jointly operated the Blue Dish Network business. Emma had also been the one who suggested that he make a short trip home before coming to Birchwood with the footage, chiefly so that he could leave his heavily branded news van behind and drive to Dan's in his far less conspicuous personal car. Dan had openly shared his expectation that the messengers would give him another sign before Trey's return, but this hadn't come to pass. As the day progressed, he started to reason that the third and decisive sign would likely come during the American evening or perhaps overnight, in line with the pattern established by the Kerguelen bolide and Trey's sightings at Lolo, so the lack of action so far wasn't overly concerning. Clark had spent the day at work, while Emma spent most of it answering all manner of questions about both Walker's hoax and the real messengers whenever Tara and Timo thought of them. Dan, meanwhile, focused on where he thought the next attention-grabbing event might occur, so much so that the new giant map he unfolded and stuck to his wall-length research board in the morning was already positively covered in speculative triangles by the early afternoon. He knew beyond doubt that Lolo was one of the points, and although he admitted it was more of a hunch than an empirically grounded expectation, another belief he had already stated, that the all-important fourth plaque was ultimately going to be discovered somewhere in Colorado, was growing firmer by the hour. Emma wasn't convinced by this assumption and didn't hold back in sharing her view, but she didn't object to Dan's speculation since it wasn't going to influence any imminent decisions. All Dan was really doing was passing the time by using every clue and idea in his mind to try to predict the location of the third sign, and there was no harm in that. With Lolo as one of the triangle's definite points, Dan predicted potential sites for the next event by using various locations in Colorado as plausible places for the plaque to be found. Stevenson Farm, the area around Pikes Peak, the IDA building in Colorado Springs, and even the Gold Rush towns of Denver and Boulder were among his potential sites. The distances between these plaque-related locations led to natural and equivalent distances between the areas where he projected that the next event might occur. Rather than a single definitive site, Dan thus ended up with what he called corridors of expectation, where he thought something was about to happen. Timo, and particularly Tara, paid increasing attention to Dan's wall-based workings as his corridors developed. He shared his thinking and explained that if he was correct, the triangle's third point would fall in either California or North Dakota. At this point, Tara raised the understandable question of how Dan could narrow it down to two small corridors which were so far apart. Rather than verbally explaining what he meant, it proved easier for him to visually demonstrate why he thought the triangle's third point would fall in one of these two distinct locations. All Dan had to do was draw a straight line on an empty part of his whiteboard, point to it, and say, "See, we know where this line starts and we know where it ends, and since we also know that all three of the triangle's sides are going to be the same length, we know that the third point can be either here on the left or here on the right. It'll be vertically centered, on one side of this line or the other."
"And one side or the other means either somewhere in your California corridor or somewhere in the opposite corridor in North Dakota?"
Tara asked. Dan had nodded and left it at that.
But now, much later in the day, and with both Trey's arrival and the hopefully imminent third sign growing closer by the minute, Dan took a moment to return to his whiteboard and urge caution by telling both Tara and Timo that he wouldn't be concerned if the third event happened somewhere else entirely. "This isn't like when I knew something was going to happen at Lolo," he said. "They haven't told me this. This is me actively looking for somewhere that makes sense, with no input from them. This is all on me. The third sign could appear anywhere, and when we line up a triangle using Lolo in this new location as two of the points, the third point could be somewhere I haven't considered, but which makes total and immediate sense. What really counts is Lolo, because no one else knows that's an important place since it wasn't all that close to the exact point of the satellite's entry. So even if anyone else was trying to map a relationship between these recent events, they'd be using the location of where the satellite entered the atmosphere instead of our spot at Lolo. That's the difference. It's not huge, but it's enough to put their final point in the wrong place. And I think that's why the messengers called me to the cornfield to tell me about Lolo."
"Well, that and the footage," Timo said, "because they evidently wanted you to either be there to see the craft, or for you to send someone who would record it."
"About that," Tara interjected, "what exactly are we going to tell this Trey guy anyway?"
Timo spoke first. "For starters, I'll buy his silence, however much it costs."
"We won't have to do that," Dan said. "We'll make sure he does well out of this, because that footage would make him a very rich man if he took it anywhere else, but it's not a case of buying his silence. He's not like that."
Timo glanced at Clark and then Emma, both of whom he knew to be less idealistic than Dan. She nodded.
"With Trey, it's really not like that. It would be just like if Dan found something. In fact, it's just like when Dan did find something. It's just like when he found the Kerguelen folder outside the IDA building and decided to post its contents anonymously online instead of selling it to the media. Trey is the same. The money won't be an issue. I think the hard part is going to be justifying why no one else can see his incredible footage."
"Trey's a good guy," Clark added, straight to the point.
"So, like I said," Tara said, "what exactly are we going to tell him?"
"I don't mean this in a bad way," Emma replied, "but you're not going to be part of the we when it comes to dealing with Trey. Neither you or Timo are going to talk to him unless he asks a very simple question, which I think it's safe for you to answer. You two just aren't as used to watching what you say about this stuff as we are."
"So you're not telling Trey about the hoax?" Timo chimed in. Emma shook her head.
"Telling him would benefit no one. All it would do is make his life unnecessarily difficult, and increasing the number of people who know would only serve to increase the chance of someone accidentally slipping up."
"But we obviously need to tell him everything else," Dan said, almost but not quite inflecting it into a question.
"Of course," Emma said. "We'll be totally open about everything that came after we found out about the hoax. So that's everything about our direct interaction with the real messengers, the very same ones whose craft Trey saw and recorded flying over Lolo last night. Remember when you wanted to tell Timo that part without mentioning the hoax? I think you called it a partial tell or something like that. Well, that's the plan with Trey. Make sense?"
100%, Dan confirmed. "We do definitely have to tell him about what happened with the messengers last night, why Lolo is an important place, and how I knew something would happen when it did. But the hoax should stay in a locked box, where it can't hurt anyone else."
"And are you happy to be the one who tells him how you knew something was going to happen at Lolo? You know the exact sequence of events better than anyone else?"
Dan nodded again. "But you'll be listening, right? Ready to jump in if I look like I'm about to say the wrong thing? Just like old times?"
"That's my job," Emma replied with a slight chuckle.
"And I'm her backup," Clark said with a grin. A slowly flashing light on the security center adjacent to the basement's stairs then alerted Dan and the others to the arrival of a car. Dan glanced at the camera feed, which showed the driveway, and saw Trey stepping out of his car.
"Showtime," Timo said.
Dan and Clark rose and hurried upstairs to greet Trey at the front door while the others waited in the basement.
"Hey," Trey said, immediately aware of Henry McCarthy's presence by the TV and equally aware that he thus had to watch what he said. Henry turned around to see who it was. Having been far more surprised to see Timo Fiori earlier in the day, he wasn't overly interested in the sight of Trey, who he only vaguely recognized, but he did take the opportunity to ask just what the hell they were all doing down there.
"We're just trying to make sense of what's been happening," Dan said. "Trey has his ear to the ground."
"I try," Trey said, choosing his words carefully. "Come across anything interesting lately?" Henry asked.
Trey felt Dan and Clark's eyes staring at him far more than he felt Henry's. He thought for a few seconds, then shrugged.
"It's difficult to know what to believe."
"Tell me about it," Henry said.
"Oh, and Clark, don't forget, the big game is starting soon."
Clark sent a thumbs up his father's way.
"Sure thing."
As Henry turned back to the live pregame buildup and the trio approached the basement, Emma's phone began to ring. It sat in the new shelf-like container which Dan had ordered online and installed in a few minutes. It was fully enclosed and compartmentalized so that no one would ever again mix up whose phone was whose, even if the models were identical, as was the case with Tara's and Clark's. Emma had asked whether Dan's ban on phones in the basement was really necessary, and, as well as telling her that it was, he reminded her that the physical structure of the basement had been designed to block all telecommunications signals, and hence that her phone would have been useless down there even if he let it in.
"Oh yeah, you need to put your phone in here," Clark told Trey.
Meanwhile, Dan opened the container to grab Emma's phone, then opened the basement door to call down and tell her it was ringing.
"I'm trying to hear this," Henry groaned from his spot by the TV.
Dan then glanced at the phone's screen and saw the caller's name. His expression stiffened immediately.
"What's up?" Clark asked. "Who is it?"
"I need you to stay down there with Tara and Timo," Dan replied.
Clark didn't push for a clearer answer, knowing both that it would come soon enough and that Dan might not want to say it out loud.
"Hold up," Trey interjected. "Did you just say Timo? Timo Fiori is down there?"
"I said I'm trying to hear this," Henry repeated,
more loudly and less patiently than before.
"You stay with me," Dan told Trey, ignoring Henry's irritable complaints.
Emma's phone stopped ringing just before she reached the top of the stairs. Dan pointed outside, telling her where they should go before returning the call.
"Who was it?"
she asked, already walking with Dan as Trey, utterly confused, followed his instruction to go with them. Dan handed Emma her phone. Then, making sure Henry wouldn't hear anything, he answered as quietly as he could.
"Jack Neal."